This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. Tom, I don't know where to start today. Here's Tom Gimbel. He's the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network. You want to talk about what some businesses are doing with their employees, or you just want to jump on the Bears anti-bandwagon?
You know what? I'm pro-Bears. Always will be, always have been. I think, you know, the one thing that we were talking about with Pete, your producer, was just, you know, how you go about a search for a position like a head coach of a football team. And it's a role that an owner who's interviewing most likely has never had, right? They've never been in that job before. And the challenge is when you're intimidated by somebody you're interviewing because you've never had that skill set and how you go about asking those questions.
I never thought about it that way. I'm wondering if I'm interviewing for a job as a coach of the Bears, I'm a big player. I'm somebody important. But so too is the guy that's interviewing me. He owns a football team. So who's intimidated by whom there?
Well, you got to remember, there's 32 owners and there's 32 head coaches. So it's a very unique situation. And the challenge is if you're take George McCaskey. He's a 78-year-old guy who never played professional. I don't even think he played college football. And he's in charge of hiring this position. And now he's sitting across from somebody who more likely than not, he wants that person or somebody like that to be his coach. And it's intimidating to sit across from somebody who's either been a part of a Super Bowl team, who was an All-American, who's probably bigger in stature and size physically than you are, and to talk about something that you're not an expert in. Very few people have that experience to interview and hire somebody for something they're truly not an expert in.
So you get somebody else to do that vetting for you, huh?
Well, at the end of the day, you're going to pay somebody, let's just say on average it's $5 million for a four-year contract. It's $20 million of yours or your family's money that you're going to do it. And what they've said in the press conference, and I think this is accurate for most teams, is you want to hire a leader of people, a leader of men. And if you're going to do that, you do know about that. And you should know about that. So the kinds of questions you want to ask aren't that different from any other job, right? Share with me a time where your team was in complete disarray. What was the biggest losing streak your team was ever on, and how did you go about handling it? Tell me about how you manage your coordinators when they disagree with you mm-hmm. on a strategy. Mm-hmm. There's questions that have nothing to do with football, but have to do with management and growth and success that anybody can answer who's been in a position of leadership.
Well, those are the kinds of questions that McCaskey could ask. Those aren't X's and O's questions. So
correct.
Are you arguing that if he followed what you just said, he would be qualified, or at least better qualified, to interview the next general manager or head coach? Yeah,
exactly. He should be asking the questions that he's qualified to judge the answers on.
Maybe he needs a hybrid. Maybe he needs two people in that room.
Oh, I think there's no doubt about it, and why they said that they brought in Bill Polian, who's been a general manager on Super Bowl teams before, to be an advisor. But it's really going into, you know, when you've been burned, and anybody who had to fire somebody was burned by the person that they had to fire, either intentionally or unintentionally, that you want to directly ask questions about what happened, right? So we were in a 7-game losing streak. If you were coaching our team and you were in a 7-game losing streak, what would you do to change it? How would you have handled the quarterback situation when we had a former Super Bowl MVP and an 8-year starter with a rookie? What would you have done? You want to see how they would have handled the situation differently than how the guys you had in place did it. And that's where he is qualified. Instead of talking about, do you believe in passing or running? Do you believe in drafting a quarterback? Do you like our quarterback? Those conversations are for football people to ask football people, from an owner to ask somebody. The same thing if you were hiring a VP of sales for your company, John, but you were never a salesperson. How would you go about driving that in our business? Tell me about a time where you had a sales team that wasn't hitting quota. What would you do? Right? Those are questions that anybody should be able to formulate, whether you've done the job or not.
Both sets of questions, though, I think are really relevant, right? these sort of generic but important how do you deal with men questions, and then the other ones, the X's and O's. What's your feelings about a passing game? What do you think about this quarterback? I think both of those things have to be brought up in depth.
They are, but you got to think about it this way too. Anybody who's either been a head coach, been an offensive coordinator or a defensive coordinator, they have the skills and they have a philosophy that got them to that level. They know how to coach football. What you're judging is, are they the right leader of men for your team? Right? Everybody's got the technical knowledge of the game, or they wouldn't be there. It's like hiring an accountant, John. It's like hiring somebody to do radio. They wouldn't have hosted their own show if they didn't have any talent. The question is, do they have the ability to be there? Do they have the intangible skills that you feel are necessary to represent being a leader of people in your organization?
I think
those are transferable skills.
Those intangibles are really hard to gauge, aren't they? Sometimes you go with your gut and you say, I like the cut of his jib, this guy, I got a good feeling about him, and I don't know, maybe there's a way to suss that out on a test or something. But I do agree with you that skill set, which might be hard to assess in an interview or in a series of interviews, is sometimes what makes or breaks a company or a department, you know? That really matters.
Well, too often, John, you know, and listen, whether it's broadcasting or recruiting or football, is that people, you get incestual with the higher level people, that they all know each other. So if you're going to hire somebody as a head coach, the real question isn't what other general managers, executives, and head coaches think. The real question is, what did the players think? What did the assistant coaches within the organization feel? How did the other people view that person? So, you know, doing references, there's an expression in corporate America of 360-degree references. Just don't do their bosses, because they're going to have a skewed version of it. But you want to do people who are below them and peers to them to get views, and you want somebody doing it, not just the person who's going to be the hiring authority, but a whole cadre of people to be going out and fishing for this information.
That's Tom Gimbel.
And that's what you should be doing.
I'm wrapping you up here, Tom, and I cut you off in mid-sentence. What were you about to say?
I was going to say, and that's what we should be doing in corporate America. That's what we should be doing in any organization where we're bringing talent on, is that this is a microcosm of life.
Yeah.
And you might not be an expert in something, whether you're hiring a painter for your home, you're hiring an accountant or a salesperson for your company, or a football coach, is you've got to focus on what you know and realize where you've been burned in the past and ask questions that address those issues.
Yeah, I see how this applies to a lot of us in a lot of situations, and that's why I'm going to announce that you will be the next general manager of the Chicago Bears. How about that?
I could only hope, John. I could only hope.
Hey, listen, if you can win more than 7 games, it's an upgrade. That's Tom Gimbel, the founder and CEO of LaSalle Network. Thank you, Tom.
Absolutely. Stay healthy, John.
Joining us now on the Wintrust Business Lunch is Philip Weiss. Lost my note on you, Philip. Hey, Philip, are you there? Welcome to the show.
I am. A happy new year. Good to be with you again, John.
So you say small companies should watch out for big ticket lawsuits. What's on your mind here?
Yeah, this is a trend that we've been sort of monitoring in the second half of 2021, and we think it's really going to hit ahead this year for a number of reasons, including some Supreme Court case rulings. It's become harder for plaintiff lawyers and people who feel they've been harmed to go after huge companies all at once. They need to find a lot of commonality, a lot of similar examples of what they're saying harmed employees. And the result of that, is simply put, is we're seeing more cases against small companies, mom and pops in some cases, as well as more lawsuits against individual locations that are part of bigger organizations. So if you run a 20, 25, or 30-person company, you could be in the crosshairs of an employment lawsuit that might not have been filed 2-3 years ago, because it's just lower-hanging fruit for plaintiff lawyers and their clients.
Is that a result of the new administration? Is there a different attitude about this?
Yeah. The short answer is absolutely. The Biden administration has gone on sort of a full court press to inform employees about their rights, whether it's union rights or discrimination prevention rights. So that's part one. And they're doing what they can to encourage states to add more protections for employees. So that's part of it. And then the other part of it, as I mentioned, is the fact that these huge lawsuits against huge companies, what we look at as class actions, are harder to file now. So that immediately means that the people who are filing the lawsuits are looking at smaller companies because they can get a quicker payday and maybe build a case from there. And just a quick example, we're helping a waste company, 23-person waste company, because they were sued given that they were hiring only men to drive the garbage trucks, handle the garbage distribution. Their view was only men would want those kind of jobs, when in fact there were women that were applying and they overlooked. That kind of case, historically, we've only seen levied against the huge waste companies, not any longer. So we're really seeing a trend now where smaller companies have got to be watching their backside and watching their forward-looking practices at the same time.
Are you taking a position on a suit like that?
Well, look, there's no question that if you are finding somebody on an individual basis, John, to be less than the most qualified, whether it's their experience, their background, or how they answer your interview questions, you have every right to pick somebody else. But this kind of knee-jerk exclusion of someone based on any category at all, that is risky. It's frankly, it's always been risky and cause for lawsuits. Now, though, it's at the forefront of the minds of small business owners.
Well, in the case of a garbage man or woman, a garbage man typically would be stronger and bigger than a garbage woman. Men are bigger and stronger than women generally. So can an employer just defer to male applicants for that reason as a function of their qualification?
Yeah, that's a superb question. And really what it relates to is, what are the job requirements? What are the lifting requirements? What are the agility requirements to the extent that you've got to move garbage around? That itself can be a qualifying or disqualifying factor. But to automatically assume that's going to eliminate an entire class of applicants is automatically risky. Yeah. So the question is, what do you do? And we've got some clients that were smart enough to make videos of what it's like to be on the job. And when someone applied for the job, they were sent the video. And they saw exactly what was involved. And they could make their own judgment. Do they want to self-select and not interview? That already helped address the issue. But at the end of the day, they didn't want to simply say, no women, no one above a certain age, etc. So there's a nice middle ground where you can get information out and still protect both your business practices and your legal backside.
I was watching my garbage man the other day. It's amazing how much lifting some of them don't have to do anymore. That process is so automated now. The guy drives the truck from the side, hops off, an arm detaches, and he just kind of wiggles the garbage can and the dumpster in place, and then the machine does all the work. Many people could do that job, regardless of age or gender.
Well, you sound like a really good plaintiff's lawyer, I got to tell you, and also someone who's looking at this with a keen, fair eye. Those kinds of anecdotes and facts are what you actually see in the cases, where a good plaintiff's lawyer will project a video of what the job requires, and then you've got the plaintiff on the stand, whether it's a man, woman, short, tall, whatever, and the jury can see just by looking at the person, they could probably do the job. So thinking about not historically what the job required, but what it requires today and in the future is part of that evaluation.
Still, says Philip Weiss, the environment has changed. Small companies should watch out for big-ticket lawsuits in 2022. Let's continue this conversation another day, Philip. I wonder if there's insurance. I wonder if they should stockpile money. I wonder how companies should address this. But if nothing else, be wary of it and maybe reach out to Seyfarth at Work, SEYFARTH at Work. Seyfarth at Work, Philip Weiss. Nice to talk to you, Philip. Thanks.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, John.
The Wintrust Business Lunch. This is the time of the business lunch. We usually focus on a business, sometimes new, sometimes they've been around, sometimes they are expanding. In this case, they are expanding. Natalie Bashaw is on a phone line with Lifetime Fitness, Vice President of Public Relations and Corporate Communications there. Hi, Natalie. It's John. You're on WGN Radio.
It is a treat to hear your voice today.
That's nice of you to say. And likewise, you guys are expanding now, right? So you've been throughout Chicagoland. You have a new location coming in the One Chicago building or development on West Chicago downtown, right?
That's right. That's right. We, Lifetime actually came into the Chicago market back in October of 2000 with our first club in Schaumburg. And then back in, I guess it was November of 2018, we started bringing more clubs back to Chicago. So we opened a club in Northbrook. And then earlier this year, well, I guess now it was 2021, we opened a club at the Oak Brook Mall, one of our first in Chicago shopping mall destination, three-level club with a rooftop beach club. And now this is our very first club in downtown Chicago. People have been asking for years, when is Lifetime coming to Chicago? And we say we're in Chicago, but unless you're in Chicago, right, you know, that's what counts. So we opened our club just yesterday, 126,000 square feet downtown Chicago.
How many people does that employ?
So we have been we've hired about 130. We'll probably get upwards of about 200 or so once the summer opens and our rooftop beach club opens there at that club too. About $46 million, more than $46 million investment into the construction of that club.
Is this the right time to be opening? I mean, someday the pandemic's going to be over, but I wonder if Omicron is good or bad for a business like yours in that. People do want to exercise. They want to have something to do, but you're in indoor space. What's the forecast for this year for you, do you think?
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's been such an interesting last couple of years for the entire fitness industry, health and wellness industry. And some of the statistics are upwards or even more than 30% of the industry has shuttered and won't come back. And what we know is, yep, it's a challenging time. And who would have thunk that this Omicron variant would just create the chaos that it has now. But what our members have told us over the course of the last now almost 2 years is they need us. They need us for their physical health. They need us for their mental health. They need us for the social community that we offer. And that's not just Lifetime. That's other health clubs that are out there as well. And the benefit of a place like Lifetime, you know, all of our 11 other clubs throughout Chicago and this one that we just opened are over 100,000 square feet. Some of them 115 to 130,000 square feet. So ample spacing is very important. We know that we can help safely keep distances amongst our members. And there's so many choices that they have for what and how they want to participate. And for some of our members, you know, when the Chicago clubs reclosed again last year, we started live streaming our classes. We launched a digital membership, and that has really changed a lot for our business in terms of how we can really serve our members, whether they want to come into the club every day, whether maybe they wake up one morning and it doesn't work for them to get to the club and they can hop on their Lifetime digital app and take some classes or do some of our great small group training programs. So it's been really interesting how it has impacted our business, but also how it's allowed us to think in new and different ways that, you know, it, without COVID, probably would have taken 10 years to come up with some new innovations. We did it in a very condensed time, as we know so many other business and industries did.
Well, as a business in the city, too, I'm just encouraged to see a business in the city come into the downtown, expand, hire people, spend upwards of $50 million and hire 100 or 200 people. I mean, that's the only way we get out of this, and that's the only way we get back to being what we used to be or can be. So I champion everything that you are talking about. You know, I was looking at the list of services that Lifetime Fitness provides. Again, they've been throughout the suburbs, now downtown at this One Chicago development, which is a city unto itself. But I was really glad to see pickleball.
Let me tell you about pickleball. Pickleball, you've maybe talked about this. Pickleball is the fastest growing sport in the country. Lifetime, we are already the largest operator of indoor tennis courts, and we have a ton of tennis players at Lifetime. You used to be one of them. And pickleball, we know, is a sport for all ages. Lifetime is committed to being the destination for pickleball in North America. And so we've got a basketball court in Lifetime, a regulation size basketball court in our new club, and then in addition to most of our other clubs. And we've been able to take some of those courts and a basketball court court and convert it into pickleball courts for open play time. And then we're also taking some of our tennis courts and converting those into permanent pickleball courts. So we're able to still appease both our tennis players, because they're very important and we love them and we want to be able to serve them, but then also introduce a whole new world to this wonderful, fun sport of pickleball. We like to say it's kind of a big dill. Thank you.
In the One Chicago development, the city's tallest residential building, where the Gold Coast and River North connect, they'll have a Whole Foods there. This is at 15 West Chicago between State and Clark. And you opened up, when did you say? Yesterday was the first day.
We opened up just yesterday. So the One Chicago project is by the developer JDL. They've got a lot of projects in Chicago and have just been a phenomenal partner for us at Lifetime. We collaborated so closely on making sure that we were going to be able to come in with Lifetime and create the space that we knew was the right space for their project. So all of the residents in the One Chicago project, they have a membership to Lifetime as part of their amenities, which in conversations with them has been a real strong selling point, because people are so familiar with the Lifetime brand and the high-end brand that we offer. And, you know, interestingly, our company name used to be Lifetime Fitness. Back in 2017, we dropped fitness from our company name because everything that we offer goes so much beyond fitness. It really is healthy living, healthy aging, healthy entertainment. So, you know, we've got our liquor license that will soon be coming at the club. We'll have parties on the rooftop beach club. We just launched a new program for active agers called Aurora. We're going to have coffee clubs. So we're really a community social space. Obviously a premium experience, but our members just have loved it, and we're so glad that they're back and focusing on their health, which we know is really our best defense right now.
Natalie Bashaw is the Lifetime Vice President of Public Relations and Corporate Communications. If you couldn't tell, lifetime.com is the website, lifetime.com. I keep saying .com, even though right in front of me it
That's
says
right.
lifetime.life. I didn't know.
Lifetime.life. You could do that. You can do a dot life. We are lifetime.life. That's
I didn't know that was a domain now, dot life. Huh?
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, lifetime.life.
Good
thank
on you
for
then.
Noticing that. I would have tried to call it out, but thanks for catching it.
Lifetime.life. Nice to talk to you, Natalie. Continued success.
Oh, thanks so much. Well, we welcome you anytime.
And welcome downtown Chicago. It's 12:43 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Okay, more business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Upscale convenience store company Foxtrot has raised $100 million in its latest fundraising round. That brings the total raise so far to $160 million. The newest infusion of cash will help pay for the company's expansion plans and new product offerings. Foxtrot operates 16 convenience stores and plans to open 25 more this year. Locations will open this spring at Tribune Tower, Willis Tower, and in the Wrigleyville neighborhood. A total of 10 new stores are opening in Chicago this year. Foxtrot launched online in 2014, delivering beer, wine, and other snacks. The company opened its first physical location in 2016. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
With the business of food, here's Steve Alexander.
Yes, sir. Today's a big one in the business of food, the farm to your belly. It's National Milk Day. The dairy producers of Illinois and the Midwest sure thank you for your support in a loosely related story. Last spring, we told you about the triplet calves being born on a farm in Amboy, Illinois. Farmers Todd and Cindy Carlson were sure surprised at the rare birth of three calves, all healthy, and they're all still doing great. Imagine, then, how surprised rancher Glenn Sheing was last week when one of his cows had twins. That was
on the 4th, the morning of the 4th.
Unusual to be sure, but not that rare. But then, 3 days later, on the 7th...
In the afternoon, she had a third calf.
But wait, there's more.
In the evening, she had a fourth calf.
Quadruplets. Mom and the kids are doing well.
All very healthy, and in fact, we never saw one of them actually being born. They were all born natural without any assistance.
And what makes it even more remarkable is the age of the cow. She's...
15-year-old cow, which will be 16 years old this spring.
Now, That's geriatric in human years. Glenn says he ordinarily wouldn't have bred the cow, but she's been a great producer over the years, and he figured she could handle one more pregnancy.
I'm kind of glad we did now.
Glenn, his wife Wendy, and son Wyatt ranch 7,200 acres just north of the U.S. border in Saskatchewan.
We're still in shock and disbelief that this could happen.
And what was your veterinarian's reaction?
She says that's Facebook worthy.
It's also WGNradio.com worthy, and you can see a picture of mom and her quads by searching for The Business of Food. By the way, the triplets in Amboy last year were named after characters in the Carlson's favorite TV show, Friends. How about the quads? Any names yet?
Good friend of ours said we should name them Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Moe.
Oh, that's good. And others have suggested a variation on that. Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Moo. Crude oil's the big mover for commodities today, up 4% right now, $81.28 a barrel. The higher gas prices are probably coming as a result of that. At the Chicago Board of Trade, kind of a quiet day. Corn right now is trading up about a penny and a half, and beans are up about a penny and three quarters. Wheat's trading about 7 cents higher. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
In this segment, let's talk a little bit about the messy tax season, bounced checks and overdraft fees. But Amy Guth, let's start with United Airlines. What's the news about the flights?
Yeah, so the CEO, Scott Kirby, has told employees in an outward-facing memo that United is trimming its schedule to address the surge in people calling out sick with COVID. So we saw huge numbers of flight cancellations over the holidays. And just as airlines are kind of getting their equilibrium back from all that, this news coming. So JetBlue Airways was kind of the first carrier to say it was going to cut back its January schedule, seeing a surge of infection rates among crews. Alaska Airlines followed. American also said that it would do the same this week. So watching for that announcement, citing COVID rates climbing among their workers. So United, of course, we watch because they're based here in Chicago and such a huge carrier out of O'Hare. It's unclear exactly how many they will be cutting and how long that will last. But, Scott Kirby said in his note that he said at one point, Newark, New Jersey, about one third of the workforce had called out sick, which is such a significant number. So he said there's about 3,000 workers currently positive. So that'd be about 4% of the U.S. workforce. But that, is not distributed around the country. That's in certain clusters where we're seeing higher upticks of COVID numbers. So more pain for the airlines after really an already very difficult time and certainly a difficult December. More pain for them in January for sure.
Also makes you wonder, so what should we do if somebody has been exposed to or has COVID, but if they're not ill and if they've been more than 3 or 5 days infected and they don't seem to be, as we say, shredding virus, maybe this new guideline to get people back into the workplace quicker rather than waiting 2 weeks once upon a time, maybe that's a good idea. It might make people uneasy, but yeah, wow. It's just so difficult for businesses to come back.
Certainly. And a lot of airlines leaders had talked about, really pushing the CDC to amend some of that guidance earlier. That was right after Thanksgiving, I think, is when that occurred. But part of the language the airlines have used for this, for United especially, they have said these are people calling out sick with COVID. So we don't know what state, they could be people who are experiencing symptoms and not feeling well and just don't want to be at work because they don't feel well. It could be people who are quarantining after a positive test. But calling out sick was the phrase that Kirby used.
Yeah. Even wonder if that includes people who are exposed, aren't sick, maybe haven't tested yet, but might not be ill at all. And the prudent thing to do is to quarantine. The IRS is warning about a messy tax season. What are they worried about here?
Oh boy, I think this is going to send a lot of people's blood pressure up. So the IRS has warned that this is going to be a pretty difficult tax season for exactly the same reason we were just describing for the airlines. They said they have staff shortages, they have significant paperwork backlogs that could really make for a messy and frustrating experience for taxpayers this year. The New York Times has a really interesting read about this that really kind of breaks it down and brings in a lot of issues to consider. But some of the numbers are really significant. So Treasury officials noted that in the first half of last year, fewer than 15,000 workers were available to handle more than 240 million calls to the IRS. So that's about one person for every 16,000 calls. That's pretty significant. So when, you know, you start to kind of internalize those numbers and you think, well, maybe this is going to be a tricky kind of year. So if you have kind of complicated taxes where you usually need to call in and be on hold or ask a lot of questions, you may want to not wait till the last minute. You may want to not wait till April 18th this year. You may want to do that just as soon as you possibly can. Another interesting thing that was noted in the New York Times reporting, I thought, was that although the U.S. population has grown by about 60% since 1970, and the tax code has gotten infinitely more difficult and complex since then, the size of the workforce at the IRS has been about flat. It's been about the same. So already that's a pretty stressed workforce that has to do a lot of stuff. When you start taking people out due to COVID, due to labor issues, due to a paperwork backlog, suddenly that kind of starts adding up and painting this picture of a pretty stressful tax season potentially facing us. So get those tax returns done early, I think, is the message.
Financial consultant Terry Savage is going to join us tomorrow with a representative from the IRS on that very topic, and be interesting to see what they have to say. No more fees for bounced checks. Where? What bank?
So that's Bank of America, and they're joining some other banks that have done this. The overdraft fee is going to start in May. It's going to go from $35 to $10, and the end of the bounced check fee will start next month. So they have followed some other ones. Capital One did this about a month ago. Ally, which is the digital-only bank, and Alliant, also a digital-only, they recently eliminated overdraft fees. And really the argument for doing so is that those who can afford the fees the least often wind up paying the most. So we're talking about a large amount of money. In 2019, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau said in a statement last month that in 2019, banks earned about $15.5 billion in overdraft fees just that year. So that's a pretty significant number. And if you put it in the context of, you know, if you've got a lot of money in the bank, you're probably not bouncing checks or being charged for having a negative balance. So again, indeed, that is something that would hit people disproportionately who can afford it the least. So they're the latest bank to take that on.
Glad to hear that. I think a lot of us who were writing bad checks years ago, and we used to write a lot of checks, wish this had come by sooner, but we'll take it when we can get it. That's Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.